You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
With UPS, Future You gets seriously pumped. As a package handler, you'll have a great job this season. Make up to $20 per hour after bonuses for a 25-hour work week. Future You goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at upsjobs.com.
Okay, and you have been listening to Governor Andy Beshear here on 93.9 The Ville. That's Beers with Beshear. This is Last Call. Drew Deaner, Jason Nemus. We've got a big show tonight. We've got Mitch McConnell coming on here at about 6:30. And that's going to be probably good timing because Governor Beshear and Senator McConnell had a conversation today that I'm really curious to see how that went.
Had a conversation today that the governor mentioned at least twice, I think three times.
Yeah.
You know, it's good that we have our governor and our senator talking. It's also good that our senator happens to be the second most powerful person in the country, and he can actually get some things done. I know a lot of people say let's just punch above our weight in a sports term.
Yeah.
And we're punching pretty high right now.
Yeah, because you're talking about serious numbers there. I mean, in terms of shortfall of a fiscal year that ends June 30, so the real ramifications, you don't know what will be on the next one, that upwards of somewhere between $319 million and $496 million shortfall that we're going to have. I mean, those are figures that, first of all, that gap's amazing, but number two, just overall, the numbers are staggering.
It's massive. It's staggering. You know, I'm one of the nine people in the House of Representatives that drafts the state budget. Just so you know what those numbers mean, about $300 million is our entire court system in the whole state of Kentucky. And so this is almost, you know, not quite double, but 170% of that. It's a massive hit into our budget that was already really tight. And so that's another reason that we need to do what we have to do and get our butts back to work. We have to reopen our economy so those types of negative consequences down the line can be minimized.
How do you make a budget then if you look to the next year? Nine guys got the impossible task because you don't know how long it's going to go. I mean, we do at least know that parts of the economy are going to reopen. How do you even forecast that?
Oh, man, it's tough. I mean, so what we did this year, and we were in the beginning stages of COVID when we passed our budget for this year. We normally have a biennial budget, two-year budget, and we had a one-year budget this year. And even then, it's going to be, you know, widely – it's going to be wrong. I mean, every government in the country is in that situation. And that's, you know, one of the questions we're going to ask the majority leader, McConnell, is, you know, there's a lot of discussion about the federal government helping businesses, and rightfully so, but – the governor mentioned tonight that they had a conversation about federal government helping the state and local governments, and we'll see what the leader has to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be one. I mean, this is not my arena. It's becoming more of it, I guess, is understanding some of this, but every state's going to be in that position. I mean, right?
Every state.
I mean, some may say they're, you know, hit harder than others, but they're all going to be in agreement that they need help. When Governor Beshear says all 50 are in agreement, I bet they're all in agreement because they're all, you know, having major shortfalls.
No doubt about it. And you're talking, you know, one of the biggest states, New York, is probably going to have one of the biggest needs. Now, Kentucky, our pension problems, we have the worst pension problem in the country, so we have specific needs as well. And that's not to say anything, Drew. He's talking about those are state numbers, right?
Yeah.
Well, we have city numbers. That has nothing to do with Louisville or Lexington's budget, has nothing to do with Douglas Hills and Middletown. So those are just state numbers. They don't encompass the city numbers as well.
And I'm sure a lot of people would argue, and I think rightfully so, look, there were problems in that pension beforehand. The pension shouldn't be all covered up, just throw that under the COVID umbrella because we weren't doing, you know, there's issues there beforehand.
Yeah, and I'm interested to hear what the senator has to say, but, you know, in my position is that, you know, the state governments, whatever they are, if it's Kentucky or New York, it doesn't matter. The federal government needs to come in and help us with those kinds of things because this was unforeseen. You know, it's going to cost money. I get that. But the federal government should come in and help us. But what the federal government shouldn't do, and I think this is what the leader was saying, I want to hear what he's got to say. They shouldn't come in and let the COVID situation be, a cover to cure all the sins of the past.
Right.
And have a bailout for misconduct, or maybe it wasn't misconduct, but have a bailout for things that aren't related to COVID. We need help taking care of business with respect to how we've been harmed by COVID. But, that, you know, we'll see what he's got to say.
I just don't know how you can plan for next year. How you, our state, how any state can plan for next year.
How do businesses plan? I mean, it's going to be tough. It's, I mean, how to, Drew, even more fundamentally than that, how do families plan?
Right.
Plan. You know, a lot of people think, you know, they're going to get their unemployment. And will some people haven't even received their first dollar of unemployment? What do you do? And this is unclear. I think we're going to give some grace here. But what do you do if you're a single parent and you need to go back to work because your business has opened up on, you know, 11th or 21st, whatever, and you're supposed to go back to work, but you don't have child care?
So you cannot go back to work.
Yeah. I mean, you can't.
Well, or here's the other thing. The scarier thing to me is people lean on their grandparents, which is the most vulnerable group there is, and that's the last thing you could or should be doing. But some people may be in a desperate spot. I don't know. I mean, it was good to hear Josh Bending up there and say that they are. That sounds like
they're gonna
grant
breaks.
That. Yes, yeah. Yes. Is say okay, I get it. That you don't have child care, you can't go back to work. Nannies can charge whatever the hell they want this summer.
Oh,
I'll tell you. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they're going
to
do with the kids.
I'd love
all day.
To be a 15-year-old girl in a nice neighborhood with you. That's the moneymaker.
They could make a fortune this summer. I don't know what we're all going to do with their kids because. He's with the public pools, neighborhood pools. They're not going to be open at least through the end of June. I mean, there was a tear shed in this house. I'll tell you about an hour ago on that
you
one.
You better believe it. You know, we've heard about telehealth and telework. We're going to have some teleparenting.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think if you install pools or, I'm not a big above ground pool guy, but maybe on a temporary basis, you might look.
We may have
that.
One in our backyard for 4 months. Who knows?
Exactly right. So I don't know. A number of things we can get to. If you'd like to get in again, we're going to get Senator Mitch McConnell in here in about 10 minutes or so. But if you wanted to get in at 81-50-93-9, we can let you do that here for a few minutes. The big obviously yesterday was a huge news day with everything that went on. What was the feedback? We looked at it in real time. I couldn't make my mind up on it. I think there may have been some sentiment from you that you weren't sure whether it was fast. You didn't think it was fast enough in some areas. No. I wasn't sure. I don't know. Where do you stand? Where do you stand today? And what's sort of been the feedback from people you've gotten emails from?
I've thought about it a little bit more myself. I've been writing a brief most of the day working. You know, I'm a citizen legislator.
Whoa, what?
Exactly. So I've only talked to a few people, but I think there is some there are a lot of uncertainty, and I think that's generating some of the angst. But there is there's starting to be, you know, a little bit of anger because, you know, why can they do this but I can't do that? Mm-hmm. Why can I go here but I can't go there? And those kinds of decisions, they have to be made. I understand that perhaps. But what people get, I think, frustrated about most of all is two things. One, it feels like a lot of these decisions are arbitrary. And we've talked about that a lot. Why can I get flowers for my wife at Kroger but not a country choir, so forth? So it feels like they're arbitrary. And then the other thing is, it looks like the numbers, not just in Kentucky, but the numbers across the country, aren't anywhere near what we feared. And we were told early on the principal reason we have to do this is to make sure we don't overrun our healthcare capabilities. Well, we're nowhere near there. And so,
although the ICU number scares me a little bit, I mean,
it's up.
That's the one number in all this in the state that I look at, and we're up to 178, I think, ICU. I mean, I think we got 400 and some beds. The total beds, right. It's not like 5%. It's nothing. That scares me. That's the one I'm starting to go, okay, I want to keep an eye on that.
And we're up about 12 from this time last week, so I want to know a little bit more about that. The numbers of new cases are down, and we have much more testing, as the governor mentioned.
Sure.
And so I think those are the kinds of disconnects that people see. But you're right. I mean, this is certainly not the flu, right? I mean, in some ways, the flu is worse because, you know, it seems like it gets more people on an annual basis. But the deaths here caused since February when this all began, COVID related to the flu, there's many more, and so it's worse than the flu.
Mm-hmm.
We have to recognize that, and you know. But that's kind of the kinds of things I'm hearing is a little bit of frustration.
Yeah, I'll tell you, there's definitely picked up demand for haircuts because as someone who lives with someone who is a hairstylist, she put her portal up online, and for Memorial Day, she's working Memorial Day. There was 20 appointments booked within, like, to 2-hour period, to the point we're just already scheduling, like, all right, can we move you a half hour here and you a half hour here? Because people are, you know, that's one that everybody's, you know, jumping in line to get there for. And I don't know that all be like that. It may not be fair because it's just a little different. But I'd say the busiest people in the state come May 25th, they're going to be barbers, hairdressers, and stylists.
That's right. Some businesses you can wait a little bit. We talked to Dr. Lynn talking about, you know, you can wait a little bit sometimes for some eye care. You can go eat at home rather than go to a restaurant or something. But, man, I need a haircut, and I ain't cutting it myself.
Yeah.
You're lucky that you got her in your home.
If you got a couple minutes, if you want to get in, 8150, 93.9. Again, just to recap a little bit on a not nearly as busy of a Tuesday, but it's 174 new cases, five deaths, a 77-year-old, a 66-year-old, a 93, a 71, and a 97. Again, those, I don't try to read those heartlessly. Those are numbers that you go back through it, and we all understand that they are. It's far more than just a name and a number on that. But that is, those are just sort of the stats of the day there. And, you know, it seemed pretty clear they probably got a lot of feedback from people about the child care issue. That seemed to be something that was a common theme, over and over again. Yeah, unemployment's a mess, and the thing of it is, you say it, that's the thing that affects people the most out of all of this, you know? I mean, that's the number one thing that affects people. We got a couple calls. Let's go to Matt on line two up first, and we got David. Let's go to Matt up first. Welcome in, 93 The Ville, Matt. Good evening.
Hi. I think we're overlooking that the only reason the numbers are so low is because we did take the drastic steps we took. If we didn't, they would be more like, you know, Spain or Italy. Also, you know, if people were really too concerned about jobs, there's plenty of jobs that are hiring. I mean, they don't make as much as they probably are used to, but it would be something that they could keep themselves busy with. Like, I'm 31. I work in assisted living. I have cardiomyopathy, which means heart failure. And it's just hearing that, you know, I take care of the high-risk people on a daily basis, and I've spent the last 7 years taking care of the elderly, the people who are most in danger at this. My wife works for the same company I do, you know, and the fact that I'm high-risk myself to this. It feels like we're trying to appease those people who want somebody else to do work for them. Like, I want to get my hair cut, you know, that they're putting their hair cut over the possibility of me getting sick and dying. Or people are putting the fact that they want to make, you know, $20 an hour as opposed to the $9 an hour if they really were worried about getting a job, that they could go make at Kroger's or wherever, the many places that are hiring because of the need right now.
But not enough to keep up with the people that have lost their job, in fairness. I mean, I agree that there's that, but clearly not enough that would even the numbers out, even close to it.
No, that's true. But a lot of the people are making more money than me on unemployment. And
absolutely. That's a big issue, I think.
It's a major problem.
Double their salary in some instances. I mean, if you're making $25,000 a year, you would, if you got your unemployment in a timely at all, you would essentially double your salary and then some when you talk about the lack of taxes you pay on the federal stipend.
Yeah, and that's what I make around this. After taxes, I make around $25,000 a year. And so, you know, I hear all these people, they're just pretty much getting bored wanting everything to open up because they're sick of waiting in the best time in the world to be waiting. I mean, you have Netflix, you have TV, you have internet, you have video games. As opposed, like, we are not suffering by staying at home. Like, you can cut your own hair. We are with the jobs. There's a lot of people, and I do feel sorry for them, and I am lucky to still have a job right now. But at the same time, I don't want to get sick and die just because people want to get their hair cut. And that's all.
The last on the list, in fairness.
Yeah, that's,
I mean, that's
we bring
the
that
third
up.
Or fourth stage. I mean, if you work a construction job, you work in a factory, I mean, you've got to feed your family, and if you're not getting your own employment, I mean, you can understand those. I mean, at least the haircuts and all that was, you know, was last on the list, you know, essentially of the openings.
Yeah, no, those people do need, I get that the need to work, and I understand being broke. Like I said, I make less than $25,000 a year. I understand struggling for money. That's nothing, you know, out of my idea. So, but at the same time,
and Matt, I want to thank you. Go ahead. Go ahead and finish, buddy.
I just see the faces that are I see the faces every day, and I've got to know and I've gotten to love the people that are most likely going to die from this, myself included. And so I take it a little bit more serious.
I want to thank you, Matt, for what you and your wife do. You guys, I think that's a really important perspective. You see it on a daily basis. But as we said a second ago, and I know you conceded and maybe overspoke a little bit about people wanting to get a haircut, so putting people in jeopardy. But, you know, what I'm hearing as a legislator is, there are people who put their entire life, their life savings, they've gotten big loans into small businesses that may not ever be able to reopen again. And our small businesses are the backbone of the United States. And so those two perspectives, I think, are important. And we haven't even mentioned, you know, the liberty interests that some folks have. And I know we don't have full liberty. And you know, these are difficult lines to draw. But it's not as simple as I want to get a haircut, and so we're putting Grandma in jeopardy of dying, and other people who are in bad spots.
The thing is you can still pray. Like, no one's saying you can't pray. So the liberty of going to church, the reason it's different from going to the grocery store, in my opinion, is if you go to the grocery store, you're not sitting there in the same spot for an hour and a half. You're not shaking hands. You're not singing. I'm a Christian. You know, I was baptized. You know, I spent half my youth teaching Bible school, going to Bible school. Like, I'm all in. At the same time, I realize that as long as I, you know, I can pray wherever I am.
I think it's a good point, Matt. I'm Catholic, and the Archdiocese decided not to meet even before they were asked not to. But I think some churches say, why can't the Nemus family, all five of us who are living together, sit on this pew and another one sit on? So the point is that they can social distance in church, so we ought to allow them to do that. And I know, you know, going to Kroger is extremely important, but it's not protected by the First Amendment. My religious freedom is protected by the First Amendment. So, but again, these are very difficult conversations and difficult lines to draw. And people of good faith and smart folks who care about America and care about our community and our and other ones around us, we can have these conversations, I think. And it's important, I think it's healthy to have those conversations.
It's tough. And I appreciate the call, Matt. You want to be sympathetic, obviously, to a guy working right there on the front lines. I would also submit, when you say you're worried about people getting a haircut, if you're the person cutting the hair, that's it. That's a different, you know, total difference in priorities, and you know, that's a job for someone else. And these jobs, we can't. While there are things, you know, to do at home, and I get our forefathers were, you know, fighting wars, and we're asked to stay inside, but that still people are going to have a need to make money. They're going to have a need to have a job, and it's not that they're being callous and not concerning themselves with the population that's passing away, but that doesn't solve the economic problems, right, of people who, you know, A, may have lost their job, and B, likely in some cases may have not gotten their unemployment.
And so, Drew, we've said this a couple of times on the show, but it's not the economic problems versus health, right? I mean, economic problems, we learned that the state is going to be down 319 to 497,000 or what, million.
Million, yeah.
Million. Well, that has some health problems as well.
All right, we're here with you, but Jason Nemus, Drew Diener, with you on 93.9 The Ville is after Governor Beshear talks. We have our show Last Call, and Jason Nemus, who was going to win a Marconi for being the best radio producer I've ever met, has lined up a very special guest for us. Mitch McConnell is on the line with us. Jason, I'll let you do the introduction for Mr. McConnell.
I don't know what kind of introduction there needs to be. The leader of the Majority Senate, Mitch McConnell, is with us. How are you doing, Senator?
Hey, Justin, good to be with you.
And I was talking to my dad earlier. He says he played at Famco Field with you back in the Beechmont Little League days. Apparently, I'm the only person here on the line that didn't play at Beechmont Little League, so I feel left out, as Nemus did as well.
Yeah, those were the days. Yeah.
Well,
go
ahead.
My baseball ability began to peter out about age 13. I went downhill after that. So I had a moment of glory, and then I faded.
Those 90-foot bases got you, Senator. Well, yeah. So the question, I guess the question that leads all right now, because I know you've heard that the governor mentioned the conversation that you guys had a couple times today. He mentioned it a couple times on his daily presser. And he said he called you, and you guys spoke about how the federal government, what the federal government's response would be to help state government and city government and city governments. And so we've done a lot for hospitals, a lot for small businesses, a whole lot for individuals. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to comment on the phone conversation that the governor mentioned a couple times today.
Well, a good place to start is what we've already done. We sent $150 billion to state and local government in the CARES bill. A significant percentage of that went to Kentucky, and the issue we discussed today was the governors all across the country would like to have more, and I'm open to that discussion, but we have added $2.8 trillion to the national debt in a little over a month, and what I've said, Jason, is I think it's time to take a breath here, to look at what we've done before, to see what needs to be corrected, on the base of the bills that we previously passed, and then discuss at that point whether more is appropriate. But I have said, in addition, that if we do another state and local allocation, it's going to need to include liability protections for those who've been on the front lines during this pandemic, the hospitals, the doctors, the nurses. The trial lawyers are lining up all over America. I was talking to a business person in another state different from ours today, and they got hit with four class action lawsuits within 4 days of the PPP program getting up and running. So there's some things we need to do, but we'll discuss the possibility of additional assistance to state and local government over and above what we've already done. Now, the city of Louisville has already gotten $133 million. They get it directly under the CARES Act. The rest of the money goes down to you guys in the state government, and you have to decide how much to keep and versus how much to send out to local governments all across Kentucky. And I know they're all anxiously awaiting decisions by the governor as to what they may get out of what we've already appropriated. So that's where we are, and the governor and I frequently have talked during this pandemic and tried to stay in good communication.
So it sounds like everybody agrees that the states are going to need something. Is the battle going to be over the dollar figure?
Yeah, I think we'll both be interested in how much is appropriate over and above what we've already done, the $150 billion, of which Kentucky got almost $2 billion, I think. And and whatever non-dollar things are appropriate, like the litigation, the liability issue that I just talked about, which is unrelated to federal money, but clearly key to the recovery. I mean, if you're running a hospital or a doctor's office, and or a small business that's trying to figure out how to open up again without getting sued, you're going to be concerned about the actions you've taken with regard to the coronavirus are not going to subject you to the epidemic of lawsuits that the plaintiff's bar has in mind all across the country. So that won't cost us any money, but it will save an enormous amount of potential financial liability as we try to get back to normal all across the country.
And Senator, you guys are returning to Congress next week, I understand. We've been talking a little bit about funding, but there are a lot of other things that Congress and the Senate is doing to respond to COVID. You know, we have in Kentucky, we're well situated with you in the Senate. We also have the United Nations Ambassador and Kelly Kraft. You're going back next week to do confirmations of judges and so forth, but there's one in particular that I'm interested in asking you about, and that is, you know, one of my good friends, so I'm a little biased, but the president has nominated Jennifer Barber, who I know you know well, to be the U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. on Economic and Social Council. That will have an impact on how we handle our relationship with other countries going forward related to COVID and other things. So what can you tell us about the work of the Congress in general and maybe Jennifer Barber's confirmation in particular?
I can tell you about the work of the Senate. The Senate's coming back Monday. The House is not. We have unique responsibility under the Constitution, and you mentioned it. It's the confirmations of nominations. The Democrats have made it extremely difficult for us to get the president's nominees confirmed even before the pandemic hit. And since we've been out of session here now for almost a month, more have stacked up, and Jennifer Barber is a good example a well-qualified nominee that the president sent to the Senate some time back that's been balled up by the obstruction that we've experienced. So we're going to go back in office, back in session in the Senate come Monday, and at the top of the list are clearing some of these confirmations. I'd like to see Jennifer Barber join our ambassador, Kelly Kraft, also from Kentucky, who really needs her on the job.
Senator McConnell, I want to ask you, we are a sports station usually primarily, but times have changed and we're talking all formats here. But, you know, in terms of sports, if there is no college football, college athletic departments are going to be in a massive problem in terms of budgets. Is there any provisions or any thought of any with all the other industries that have been taken care of, whether it's forgivable loans or whatever the funding may be? Has there been any thought of, I don't know, necessarily call it a college athletics bailout, but some way to help the colleges if there is no college football season?
We haven't talked about that, but I think there will be a college football season. They may have nobody in the stands or reduced attendance, but my understanding is, particularly in the ACC, which I follow, that they're anticipating having a season. More immediately, I called the commissioner of baseball a couple weeks ago, and I said, America needs baseball. It's a sign of getting back to normal, any chance. And you may have heard there is discussion about having an abbreviated season beginning around the 4th of July, where the teams would either play at their spring training sites in Arizona or Florida or play at home to largely empty stadiums. But I think there's an active discussion underway to salvage part of baseball season. And if we can salvage part of baseball, surely we can salvage football as well. There'd still be at the bigger schools like U of L and UK television revenue, which would help. But I think the country needs sport. We've all missed that during the pandemic, and the sooner we can get at least some of our sports, and I think the one eligible to begin first would be baseball, it would be a great morale booster for the country and an indication that we're going to begin to get back to normal.
We just got word about 20 minutes ago that Churchill is going to open May 16th. Obviously, tomorrow or Saturday would be Derby Day. Are you optimistic that we'll have a Derby Day with some fans in the stands?
Well, it's now scheduled for Labor Day weekend, and that's certainly what we hope. And I think they plan to run the Derby. How many people will be allowed in at this point? It's difficult to predict, but America missed the Kentucky Derby as well, or is going to miss it this Saturday. And we don't want them to miss it all year.
Senator, we are talking with Majority Senate Leader Mitch McConnell. We have 1,000 questions. We'll ask one more and get you off here. We're very thankful that you've given us this amount of time. And the question I have is, unfortunately, yesterday in Kentucky, we have surpassed the 50% mark in our deaths being from long-term care facilities. And over the last 10 days, 14 days, Senator, about 70 to 80% of the deaths in Kentucky have been from these nursing homes. I know we've done a great deal to help hospitals and also long-term care in the federal dollars. But what more could we do? Can we do more? Because this it seems to me that this is the place where we have to really focus our efforts to take care of our loved ones.
Well, nursing homes were eligible, and the significant tranche we did for hospitals in the CARES Act. I know some of that has gone down to nursing homes in Kentucky. That could be an example of a type of health facility that may need more. But a lot of the money that came to Kentucky was related to, I don't have the figure right in front of me, but was related to hospitals and to healthcare facilities like nursing homes. One of the things that helped, the governor finally dropped the ban on elective surgery, which was really having a terrible impact on rural hospitals, and I'm sure you all in Frankfort heard about that.
Right.
We had hospitals in Kentucky that had little or no COVID patients and empty beds because they couldn't do elective surgery. That has now apparently been lifted, and that's a good step in the right direction because there were plenty of unmet healthcare needs that were put on the shelf during the period when we were concerned about the hospitals being overrun with COVID patients.
Well, Mr. McConnell, we certainly appreciate time. Hopefully, do you know how to make your own mint julep on Saturday? I mean, you're gonna enjoy one somehow.
Are they going to have some kind of simulated race? I heard.
Yeah, they've got all the 13 Triple Crown winners. They're going to do a simulated race and try to raise a couple million dollars as well. So, is your money on Secretariat or who you got?
Citation.
All right. Well,
We'll have a mint julep Saturday. Enjoy talking to you, Jason. Good luck there in state government.
Thanks, Senator.
Okay.
All right, there you go. Thank you. Mitch McConnell with us here, 93.9 The Ville, ESPN 680. We just had one of the most powerful men in America tell us he thinks we're having a college football season. What I got out of
from
that.
From his lips to God's ears.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
And baseball. You're going to have, and I know that, that doesn't mean as much to you, but to me, baseball is all there is. And so, you know, so it's we're happy about that. A lot of news made there. I mean, Drew, look, in the last couple of weeks we've had Ryan Quarles come on the day that the president came out with his meatpacking plan. We had Mike Adams come on and break some news about the
election. The elections.
Process.
Told us how we were going to do the elections, we found out the next day. Yeah.
It was old news by the
end. Yeah, right, exactly.
And now we got Mitch McConnell coming on telling us we're going to have college football, and it's just, you know.
And the hits keep on coming. The rookie of the year in radio producing, Jason Amos, is going to get. We got John Yarmuth coming on Monday. We got
Attorney General Cameron and John Yarmuth coming on Monday. Tomorrow we have the owner of the Sacramento Kings, who also has a strong interest and a lot of knowledge in testing. His name is Kevin Nagel. So we're really excited about what we've got going.
I mean, I think it's kind of fun. I talked to Jared Stillman down in Nashville because he used to work for me. Now we got Mitch McConnell on the line having takes on the virtual derby and on the college football season. I mean, it's not like he's not tied. I mean, it's not like he hasn't had conversations there with those people about the college football season. So I am.
He called the baseball commissioner?
Yeah. You got to take that call. Yeah, Rob Manfred, you got to take that call. So I don't know. That gives me a little bit of optimism for sports. And he goes with citation, goes off the board, not playing the favorite there in the.
That's right. I've got affirmed. I was born in 1978. Affirmed. Okay. Won the Triple Crown.
I was born in 73. I'm biased, and nobody's beaten that record since.
No, I think you might. You may get the win.
Well, that was great. If you want to get in, we'll let you react to that. 81-50-93-9. You can. I'd say text, but at some point I'll figure out the text line and how to do that. But that's a strong opinion on college football season. Because if they don't, frankly, that is something that you'd have to bail out college universities out. I mean, you don't want to do that. I mean, you'd have to colleges and universities. You'd have to do that. I don't think they want to do that.
Right.
What did you read? You know, politics is your arena. What did you read between the lines about the conversation between the governor and Mitch McConnell today? Because you've heard them both comment on it.
Right.
I'm not as experienced. Like, when I hear Rick Pitino talk after covering 20 years, I know what he really means.
Right.
These guys are your world.
Well, Mitch McConnell obviously is the master of all of all the political world, and he plays what's called the long game. And I think he mentioned immediately, he said, well, we're going to have that conversation, but we can't have it without. And then his without was liability protections, and I think that's what's on his mind. That's point one. Point two is, you know, we've spent, in these numbers, Drew, when you talk about a bunch of deaths, they become statistics. When you talk about a single death, somebody you know, that becomes real. Similarly, when you're talking about the public finances, when you talk about a little bit of money going to one program, that's real to you. But when we talk about trillions of dollars, it doesn't feel as real, but it is real.
Yeah.
And I think what the senator was saying is, you know, we've put a lot of money on the table already, and it's not money that we have. And so somebody's got to pay it. How much more can we do? And if we do more, it has to be much more focused. Perfect example. What we've done, the federal government, because they wanted to act really quickly to help unemployment, well, what they've done was ham-handed, and it's actually hurt businesses because it was too much of a kicker, that $600 we talked about.
It's way too much, and it's $600 non-tax. It's like getting $800, $1,000 probably on top of another $552. It's a disincentive. I talked to someone today who works for one of our partners, and he said he, even as the employer, would have felt bad to ask some people to come back to work knowing – they're making more money on unemployment.
Right, that's right. And so I think, you know, where does the federal government get its money? It's not on a tree, right? It's taxpayers. So we're giving money to taxpayers that comes from other taxpayers. And so because the government is nothing more than a collection of taxpayer dollars.
Yeah.
And so I think what the senator is saying is, trying to read between the lines, is, look, we've done a lot. And so it's time to pump the brakes and let's think more clearly about if we need to do more, let's make it much more targeted.
Absolutely. All right. We'll take a quick break to reset here. 81-50-93-9. If you would like to get in, 81-50-93-9. Hopefully, we can get that clip. I'd like to play that again about the college football season. I think that's very significant. On top of some of the other things there, so we will do that here momentarily. And then we'll get Shaq and we'll get David. We'll get both of those calls on the other side. Well, you know what? Let's tell you what, Pat Ice. Let's go ahead. We can push on through here. Let's go. Let's go to Shaq up next. Shaq, welcome at 93 in the Ville. Shaq, hey. Good evening.
Hey, good evening. Hey, Jason, just aside, I was talking to a classmate of yours, and we were saying you for governor in like 5 years, but just whatever.
I thought we were friends. I don't. That's not a friendly suggestion.
Yeah. Well, I said a classmate. I didn't say friend, but
got it.
Mike M from your class back in the day.
Yeah, he's my buddy.
Yeah, he's a good dude. Basically, my comment, just a couple comments. I think. Basically, everybody just got to get ready for a new normal, both sides. You know, like it's always been said, maybe I just think that kind of got to be beat into people's head a little bit with the mask, with adjustment. All these things will happen, you know, and it's both sides. People who want to rush, let's get out there and let's open up. The people who are like, hey, let's not, you know, let's slow it down. I think there's a balance and there's an equal time. And whenever it does happen, the main thing, whenever it happens, let's do it right. So the new normal, like, you know, if you got to wear a mask, wear a mask. If you don't, I mean, whichever. And people worry about the civil liberties. I mean, to a degree, it's the same thing when you go into a business, they say no shirt, no suit, shoes, no services. Like, just be flexible. I said it before, be flexible. And then the other thing, I hope we as a public have learned a little bit. So far as we have all these things, you know, like 9/11, all the financial crises. Are we saving yet as Americans, as Kentuckians? I mean, this is like, it has been a while. Granted, I got you. But some of these things, where I remember week one, week two, week three, people are like, oh, man, what am I going to do? You know, it's like, hopefully we can, like, learn. Each time we go, this won't be the last thing in our life that we'll go through like this. You know, so learn from it. And just the kind of last thing, just hopping on the center, just non-political. You guys already said it, the format of this is sports. Hey, let's bring on some football. Look, I'll watch the doggy bowl or whatever that is for this. just have some sports. You know what I'm saying?
Literally, well, look, sports. That gave me the most hope. We're going to have a college football season right there. It sounds like he's been on the horn with some people, and I think we are going to have some football. May not be with fans, or maybe I like what he said, limited fans, because I'm glad I'm not the only person who thinks there's someone between 0 and 100% right. of what we used to be. And I think that's going to be the challenges in churches and sports arenas and – you know, and things of that nature for a while.
And as Shaq was saying, let's think, let's learn, let's plan. It's not zero or nothing. It's not the way it used to be, or the worst, or the, you know, terrible times coming ahead. You know, we can think through this and learn from where we are, and I think, you know, I think we can come out of it a little bit better. I'm happy. One of the things I'm happy about that I think Shaq was kind of alluding to is, and this is something we talked about a few times, I think maybe we might have a new normal in politics. Hopefully, you know, Republicans and Democrats, I hope they come more to my side, but hopefully sure. Republicans and Democrats can start working together a little bit more and not just fighting over petty stuff all the time. There's some fundamental things we disagree with, but the petty stuff, come on, man.
Well, I like that the senator and the governor had a conversation today, and seemingly both speak of regular conversations, you know, about this. So, I mean, some of those things you go, well, you should be doing it, but maybe in some states they don't, you know. I don't know what they do in other states, but it seems cordial here. Let's go to David up next. David, welcome in, 93.9 The Ville. Good evening.
Jason, David Holton, how are you?
Hey, Judge, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, my man. The biggest loss of this corona mess is we're not going to have our softball season this year.
Oh, no. Let me tell you a quick story behind that, Drew, if I could.
Yeah.
So Judge Holton has the best law firm softball team, and I was on the worst. So I called him and said, I'm going to open a can on you tonight. How'd that work out? He got a case from me.
Drew, we bet a beer. I said, whoever wins, you know, that's the loser got to buy us a beer. So I don't know if I got that beer from you, Jason, honestly. But, Drew, I used to listen to you when you were on VLK in Lexington. I always enjoyed your broadcast. I'm a Cat fan, but enjoy your professionalism. And don't always agree with your UofL leanings these days, but I always enjoy you're a true pro.
Yeah, you're definitely not the first, won't be the last to say that one, that's for sure. BLK, that's a very narrow target in my career, so I appreciate that.
Can I tell you what? You better make sure that nobody ever gets all those BLK tapes, okay? Because I don't know if you're going to...
Oh, that's right. I found some old games of Rob Bromley I did here on my old MacBook, or old Mac in here a little while ago. I'll have to post those soon.
Well, first of all, I support what Governor Beshear is doing. He's been aggressive and he's been cautious, and I believe he's taking the right steps. And I support the direction he's going in. And for Mitch McConnell to talk about the Democrats obstructing confirmations, remember Merrick Garland, Jason, the Obama's nominee for the Supreme Court, he didn't even get a hearing or a vote. So Mitch McConnell is the king of obstructing judicial nominations. But we'll let that go. You know which side of the aisle I'm on, Jason, but you guys are good, and I just found your show a couple of nights ago, so I'll be tuning in and following you guys. If I can ever do anything for you guys, let me know, okay?
Hey, thanks, appreciate Judge. It. Monday through Friday, we're here after the governor talks. And good to see he's taking the Derby Day off. He said he's taking off for himself, whatever else. But I think the last thing he wanted to do would be at 5 o'clock when they're showing something with the Derby or maybe playing the virtual race. Mel Kentucky on Wave 3 has to make a decision, so or LEX in Lexington. So, hey, well, appreciate the – Oh, go ahead,
Jason. When it's safe, Jason, we'll get a case of beer and take some friends down to the park and hit some balls. All right, man.
Anytime, Judge. Anytime.
Thank you, my friend.
And hopefully that's I don't know. Can we hope for that in July? Is that the earliest we're allowed to hope for that? Or
well, June? As long as somebody doesn't report me to Uncle Andy, I can do it in May.
Yeah. Well, hey, they got Tom Brady. They pinched him down in Tampa.
That's right. Well, that is one of the 10 things we're supposed to do is squeal on each other. But
yeah,
I'm following the 9 plan.
Yeah.
Hey, David, Jason, by the way, thanks for the work you did on medical marijuana and the gambling. We need to get both those things moving down the road, move the Commonwealth ahead.
Yes, we do, Judge.
We can't continue to live on, as I've said before, the only person that ever survived a hunger strike is somebody started eating again, okay? And this Commonwealth has to start eating again so we don't starve to death. Thank you.
That's right. Both the gambling and the medical marijuana, neither one of those are a panacea that will bring in, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars that will solve our problems, but I mean, you know,
I'm not sneezing at any amounts of millions of dollars right now.
What could you do
with
the extra $50 million?
Yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to battle the government, you know, or you know, with the Senate or Congress or whatever to try to get funding if you can generate some of it on your own. We can roll through here. We got a couple more calls. Let's go to Charlie up next. Charlie, welcome in to 93. Listen to Last Call. Drew Deaner, Jason Nemus here with you, Charlie.
Yeah, Jason, I'm one of your constituents, and I've communicated with you on Twitter, and the previous caller kind of stole my thunder, but my question was, why can't the legislature just get together in a bipartisan way and have a special session and go on and pass the online gambling and the medical marijuana so that there's at least some stream of millions coming in, and I don't know if the state will ever recover their $15 million from the Brady Industries mess, but why can't there just be a special session and the legislators just waive their salary for that and go and get that passed and get a steady stream of income coming in?
Well, Charlie, thanks for the call. The quick answer to that is in Kentucky, only the governor can call a special session. I'm hoping he does, and he very well may because the budget's going to need to be revised. If I hear that he is going to call a special session, I've already committed that I'm going to write to him, and I'm going to call him and text him as well and say, Governor, will you please put medical marijuana and sports betting on the call for a special session? With respect to whether we should forego our salary, you're darn right we should. I mean, I think we should also give up our pensions. I don't think legislators should get pensions either. But to your fundamental point, we can't call ourselves back into session. The governor has to, and I anticipate that he very well may this fall.
When would that be, you think, roughly, maybe?
He could do it any time. I don't think he'll do it now. If he's going to do it, he's not going to do it with so much uncertainty with respect to, you know, what do the numbers look like. You know, once we go back to work and revenues start to come in, I think at that time it would be appropriate, and maybe we leadership in the House and the Senate and the governor's office can have a deal in advance so we can go in. You can pass a bill no quicker than 5 days, so we can go in and go out for 5 days, waive our pay would be fine with me, and then get something done. And then while we're there, you know, let's not just do the budget revision. Let's go ahead.
Which one would have the best chance of passing, do you think?
Medical marijuana by far.
Yeah, really.
The sports betting, we have the votes for both of them.
This is the most frustrating damn thing to me.
It is.
If you just had a wide open vote put to a vote, it would pass.
It would pass with supermajority, over 60 votes. And a perfect example, and just to say I'm not just spitballing and just making up stuff, I said it about medical marijuana for 2 years. I finally got a vote. Over two-thirds of the House of Representatives voted for medical marijuana. Republicans, Democrats came together. We passed it with over two-thirds of the members. Same thing would happen with sports betting. The problem is we have a group that's blocking it, and they have a powerful, although a minority, a powerful contingency of legislators. So what we need to do is make sure that our legislators are going up there, whoever you vote for. I'm not saying be a single-issue voter on anything, but make sure your legislator understands that your job is not to go up there and block things that the majority of Kentuckians, overwhelming majority of Kentuckians, support. So yeah, when you're thinking about voting for somebody, Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, I don't care, say, hey, when you go up there, are you gonna try to block something that the overwhelming majority of Kentuckians support? Hey, vote no, bro. Vote no and tell mm-hmm. the reasons why you're against it. Try to convince other people. But we don't have sports betting and we don't have medical marijuana here today because of the minority of legislators, period.
It's so frustrating. But you know, you wonder if the mood changes when you go, all right, we're desperate for money. What can we do? Can we do this? Can we do that? Yeah, do we? You know, it's not something where it's a close vote. You go, we do have the votes. We've got to get this through. Will there be pressure there? That's your world. That's your arena. I don't know how the public pressure will work there. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. But I think we got to look under every couch cushion we can to find money.
We do. And you know, we've talked about this.
$500 million. We're not actually doing that great around the state last I checked anyway. So $500 million deficit. Add that to it.
Sports betting will be a percentage of that. Not all of it, but a percentage of that. And you know, we've talked about it. I'm not for sports betting because the money it brings in. That's great, wonderful. I'm for it because of liberty. You ought not put me in jail because I want to put $5 on the Red Sox. That's a liberty issue. But hey, stronger and stronger argument, I think, is that money coming in, especially when we're in a bigger hole.
I do want to play, in case you just missed it, because a couple of breaking news things. The Churchill Downs, they got their act together in a hurry. They said that, you know, Monday's May 11th. They're going to open May 16th is when they're going to have their first spectator-free races. That's one sports story. The other sports thing, we had Senator Mitch McConnell on, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. I feel like I need to say all those terms with Mitch McConnell. But I asked him about, you know, do we have the question there too? Do I need to say the question, Patty, or what do we have? Okay, so here's the question. Listen to the answer. If there is no college football, college athletic departments are going to be in a massive problem in terms of budgets. Is there any provisions or any thought of any with all the other industries that have been taken care of, whether it's forgivable loans or whatever the funding may be? Has there been any thought of, I don't know, necessarily call it a college athletics bailout, but some way to help the colleges if there is no college football season?
We haven't talked about that, but I think there will be a college football season. They may have nobody in the stands or reduced attendance, but my understanding is, particularly in the ACC, which I follow, that they're anticipating having a season. More immediately, I called the commissioner of baseball a couple weeks ago, and I said, America needs baseball. It's a sign of getting back to normal, any chance. And you may have heard there is discussion about having an abbreviated season beginning around the 4th of July, where the teams would either play at their spring training sites in Arizona or Florida or play at home to largely empty stadiums. But I think there's an active discussion underway to salvage part of baseball season. And if we can salvage part of baseball, surely we can salvage football as well. There'd still be at the bigger schools like U of L and UK television revenue, which would help. But I think the country needs sports. We've all missed that during the pandemic, and the sooner we can get at least some of our sports, and I think the one eligible to begin first would be baseball, it would be a great morale booster for the country and an indication that we're going to begin to get back to normal.
Well, there you go. He wants baseball. He thinks we'll have football. You know, I don't know how many conversations he's had, but I don't think he says things that he's not, you know, I don't think he just read something on the back page of, you know, sports section somewhere to say that.
Any reference conversations that he had? I know he did work in the ACC, which I follow. So, you know, Vince Tyree and Neely Bendapudi are probably happy with that little reference there.
Yeah. All right, let's get one more in here. Let's go to, let's see, that was Charlie. That's Will up next. Will, welcome in. 93 on the Ville, ESPN 680.
Hey, something kind of on the subject, off the subject, but they're saying a lot of kids around the country are not going to stay in the areas and not, you know, be more cautious about coming because they're scared if the school's open, you know, colleges, they might have to, you know, stop it midstream and go back. You know, I think what you're going to see, and I don't hear a lot of talk about, is these salaries, the parents are going to be very upset when these coaches are still making this big money for virtually, you know, I mean, the teams are good. Let's face it, you know, I know it brings revenue, but I think you're going to see a lot of issues pop up when they're going to have to jack up some serious tuitions to overcome some of these shortfalls you guys are discussing with the sports revenues and everything. And I think, you know, some of this $4 million, $7 million crap, I think, man, you're going to see a big backlash. I think that those days are over. This, you know, $10 million saving, you know, $8 million here and there for, you know, mediocre. You know, I think those days are over. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I think it just depends on the place. If it's at a place where athletics pays for itself, I think they're totally. You know, I think we lost a call there. I think totally fine. I think any more any subsidies that the general fund pays for athletic departments, whether it's covering even an electric bill or anything, even an accounting thing that may not be an actual cash transaction, I think those days are, especially at the Power Five schools where you have the ability in a lot of cases to be self-supportive. I think it's going to be much tougher to get those funds. Now, a lot of schools, most schools aren't like the Power Five. You're talking about 60 schools out of, I don't know, 400 in the country or whatever it is. But if you're talking about big salaries, you're talking about Power Five. But in you know, a lot of those instances, they're self-supported. But I think the days of getting a lot of money from the university, which isn't the case at most of the big-time schools, are long gone.
Right, and you couldn't justify that anymore at those schools. I mean, you know, we talk about athletics. There's going to be a lot of changes in our society from COVID and the response and the recovery and so forth. Athletics is obviously going to be a major part of that, which is what, you know, we're talking about on this channel mostly. But already last week we saw the University of Kentucky and the University of Louisville have hundreds of people that were laid off or furloughed. So, you know, we got a lot of problems coming, and universities, athletics, or their academics are not going to be saved from that.
Yeah, I mean, UofL coaches all took a 10% pay cut. Vince Tyree foregoed two $150,000 bonuses, and Kansas, a couple of coaches that did that the other day over there for Les Miles and Bill Self, that was for 6 months. I don't know how, you know, permanent it was, but there'll be others to come. And it all depends on college football. I mean, it comes down to all the revenue football there for college football and college basketball too. But college football is a driving force for most athletic departments. So.
And Drew, tell me, I don't know this. Maybe I should, but we're talking about college football. It's gate revenues, yes, but it's also even more so, right? Television, much more so.
Well, television was a big part of it. Although with college football, the revenue is far more with donations and tickets than the NFL is with the big money. I mean, there is money, obviously big money with college football, but if you're talking about 60,000 seats and, you know, I started calling them personal seat licenses, that's what they are. They're donation levels for certain seats. It's a big hit. Vince Tyree went over some of those numbers last week or a couple weeks ago, I think, on one of his Zoom meeting, press conferences, whatever we're calling these things these days, and I went over that. But if there's no college football, college athletics as a whole would be in serious trouble, and a number of schools in particular. So, wow, that's a busy day.
It's been a busy day. We're making news. The senator came out with some good stuff, and you know, I do think, you know, it's been positive in a lot of ways, but I do want to highlight something because it's a tough time we're going through, and that is that we eclipsed the 50% mark in deaths from long-term care facilities. That's big news.
Yeah, that's a high percentage, and that's where the challenge continues to be and where everything has to, you know, a lot of effort's got to be focused. So, all right, well, Jason, we'll do it again tomorrow. You know.
Big show tomorrow.
Tough for an encore when you get, you know. But we are having Congressman Yarmuth on Monday as well, and the Attorney General as well. So,
yep,
got all that going on here. So that'll do it for us, and we'll talk to you tomorrow night, and I'll talk to you about a little less than 12 hours from now here on 93.9 The Ville, ESPN 680.